This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Robert Smith in Washington. Neil Conan is away. So far in the presidential race, we've heard a lot about the length of resumes. Who has the most experience? But what kind of experience are we talking about here? John McCain has the most time in the Senate. Hillary Clinton spent more years in the White House, albeit as First Lady. And Barack Obama points to his experience outside of government as an organizer on the streets of Chicago. Looking back at history, U.S. presidents with the most experience before entering the Oval Office didn't always turn that resume into presidential success. So what kind of experience does a president need before taking the oath of office? Can three different people, as we have with McCain, Clinton, and Obama, with very different kinds of life experiences, all be capable of answering the phone in the White House at 3 a.m, as the ad goes, and possess the judgment to know what to do next? Today we'll talk with a presidential historian for a look at how other presidents have stacked up. And a bit later, we'll go inside the recent research that says more experience may not always be better. And it's Monday. We'll get to the Talk of the Nation opinion page. This week, we remember Gary Gygax, the creator of Dungeons & Dragons. But first, presidential experience. We want to hear your stories this hour. When in your life has your level of experience worked or not worked for you? Whether in your job, at school, at home, what did it teach you? Did sometimes creativity trump experience? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org. And you can also comment on our blog. It's npr.org/blogofthenation. We'll start with Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor. He's here in Studio 3A.
Wait, experienced political editor.
Experienced political editor. The most experienced in the room, perhaps. Hi, Ken. How's it going?
Hi, Robert.
Experience is obviously being made an issue by the candidates, but what do we know about how important it is to voters?
Well, I mean, exit polls will show that I think the Barack Obama message of change may outweigh Hillary Clinton's thing of experience. But the question is also, what kind of experience does Hillary Clinton actually have? She talks about 35 years of experience. And of course, you know, there's some question about what she has done. She's taken credit for, you know, solving the warring factions in Northern Ireland, Kosovo. I think she also formed the League of Nations after World War I, which was a remarkable...
little known fact.
Yes, yes. But look, if experience was the big deal, Joe Biden has been in the Senate since 1973. Chris Dodd has been in the Senate since the 70s. Bill Richardson had a resume that most candidates would dream about. But I think what she's trying to do with the word experience is compare her role as First Lady and her term and a half in the Senate, comparing that to Barack Obama's seemingly less experience, and that's why she did the 3 a.m. ad.
Now, we were talking 2 months ago about this change versus experience dichotomy. Recently, though, over the last week especially, we've seen both sides try and capitalize on the other issue. Barack Obama has really started to question what kind of experience Hillary Clinton has, and Hillary Clinton is pushing hard that she is also a change agent by virtue of her experience. So is there still a group in the middle that these two are trying to reach with these nuances?
Well, I think that's true. I mean, I think clearly Hillary Clinton wants to make the point that while change is a good thing, you have to have some kind of experience. And she said from the beginning, and if you listen to all the debates, she's ready from day one. Of course, Barack Obama's response to that is that you have to be right from day one. And for all her experience, she voted for the war, the authorization of the war in 2002. He spoke out against it. So what is experience mean? And Democrats are saying for years now that for all the experience that Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld had, the war in Iraq, let's be honest here, is not going that well, or at least is not seen as a success by most voters. So you know, there's a limit to what experience really is.
Is this a dangerous argument to have for the Democrats, especially since the Republican they're going to face clearly, in terms of length of experience, is the winner hands down on that kind of experience?
Well, of course, if experience was everything, then George H.W. Bush would have defeated Bill Clinton in 1992. Perhaps Al Gore would have beaten George W. Bush in 2000, the kind of experience and the kind of lifestyles, life-changing experience they've had. But obviously, the Republican Party is banking on the fact that certainly on foreign policy and foreign policy experience, if anybody's most capable and ready to answer the phone at 3 a.m., it would be John McCain. And so it is an argument that I expect the Republicans to use in the fall.
Last question. Barack Obama is starting to question Hillary Clinton's experience. Has he done a good job of selling his own varied experience as one that would matter in this political situation?
Well, no, because I think we see more and more voters coming out of the voting booth still not sure who Barack Barack Obama is, what he represents. We saw that coming out of Ohio and Texas. And of course, Barack Obama says that he has more worldly experience than you talked about earlier about his community organizing in Chicago. But obviously, he's going to have to try to make the case that experience is not the answer. And as we saw in 2000 and 1992, that the hope of change might be enough to outweigh the experience issue.
Thank you very much, Ken.
Thanks, Robert.
Ken Rudin is NPR's very experienced political editor. He'll be here again on Wednesday for our regular visit with the Political Junkie. We turn now to the records of our past presidents and how they stacked up experience-wise. Joining us here in Studio 3A is presidential historian Robert Dalek. He's written biographies of Franklin Roosevelt, Lyndon Johnson, and John Kennedy. His latest book is Nixon and Kissinger, Partners in Power. I suppose also Partners in Experience, right? Thanks for coming in.
My pleasure.
So in your opinion, as you look back historically, how important is this question of experience? Does it always come up?
Yeah, it always comes up, but it doesn't always resonate all that well. Before the American Civil War, you had a president by the name of James Buchanan. He was so experienced, they called him Mr. Government, and he's now seen as one of the worst, if not the worst, president in the country's history. Herbert Hoover spent 8 years as Secretary of Commerce in the 1920s before ascending to the presidency in 1929. The Great Depression overwhelmed him. And if experience were all that important, why does Franklin Roosevelt beat him in 1932? Hoover had been there so long, so often. So experience is not the bottom line. And I think when we get into this presidential campaign this year, much more important than experience is going to be judgment, is going to be voter views of what kind of judgment a president, a candidate will bring to the Oval Office. But even more important than that, if there's a deep recession, the Iraq War is going poorly, this is what will resonate with voters.
But it's easy to prove experience. You can write down all the things you did. But how do you prove judgment in a campaign?
No. What you've got to keep doing, it seems to me, is addressing big issues in judicious ways, in ways that convince voters that you would exercise wise judgment in meeting the problems that all presidents confront. Now, judgment is not something which is necessarily consistent from one minute to the next by any given president. For example, John Kennedy came to office and he relied on the experience. He, in a sense, pushed aside his own judgment, relied on the experience of his military and national security chiefs in April of 1961 in deciding to go into the Bay of Pigs. And that proved to be a disaster.
Well, a lot of people make that comparison between Barack Obama and John F. Kennedy, saying here is a man with not as much national exposure as some of the other candidates. Is that a fair comparison? Because JFK actually did have a fair amount of experience compared with Barack Obama.
He did. But like Obama, he was a very bright guy, and he had a kind of skeptical side to him. So that when it came to the Cuban Missile Crisis, he remembered the experience of being misled by the military and the CIA in the Bay of Pigs operation, and trusted his own judgment. And his own judgment proved very wise, very sensible, because that was the greatest crisis in the history of the Cold War, and he led us through it without getting us into a nuclear conflict. His judgment worked there. I can give you a number of examples, for instance, of Franklin Roosevelt exercising good judgment and occasionally poor judgment. So, you know, it's not something which is inconcrete that you can say, ah, yes, this man or this woman has perfectly good judgment. At times they'll show good judgment, at times they'll show poor judgment. But you want to vote for someone, it seems to me, who you have confidence will demonstrate greater judgment.
Let's get the callers involved in this conversation. We go now to Amy. Amy joins us from Denver, Colorado.
Hi, thank you for having me on the air.
Thanks.
My question or comment is that the types of experience, I think, are much greater than the number of years of experience a particular candidate has. In particular, I think Barack Obama far outweighs the issue on experience compared to Hillary Clinton because his experience is so varied. He's lived abroad. His community organizing work in Chicago shows that he has the skills to lead in all sorts of different situations. And I just don't see that Hillary Clinton has the various types of experience that are required to lead our nation.
Well, Robert Dalek, have there been presidential candidates and presidents who really relied on experience outside of the political system or the military? I mean, that's obvious. But sure. Are there people who have come up either through foreign travels or community organizing or that kind of thing?
Sure. They depend on their life experience. You know, John Kennedy traveled quite widely before he ever came to politics, ran for the House, ran for the Senate, ran for the presidency. He had traveled widely in Europe. He had also been to the Middle East and to Asia. Did it count all that much when he confronted the Bay of Pigs issue? Didn't give him all that much help, and he stumbled badly there. So, you know, it's impossible. What I'm saying is I'm a skeptic about all this talk of experience. Now, I'm not saying experience doesn't count. It can't be valuable. And indeed, as a historian, what I would say is you want to have a rich knowledge of history. If you know a lot of history, it can be helpful. On the other hand, you can take some historical analogies and misappropriate them. The first George Bush saw what had happened to Harry Truman in the Korean War. Having crossed the 38th parallel and provoked a war with the Chinese, it destroyed Truman's second term. By the time Truman left office, his approval rating was at 32%. Well, the first Bush decided that he should not go into Iraq because it reminded him, I believe, of this crossing the parallel and being drawn into a kind of unwinnable war. And so he exercised very good judgment there. The current president decided that, like Woodrow Wilson, you could change the world, you could alter a huge region of the world with a very alien experience and a background from our own. So it's judgment, that it seems to me. And
can I add a comment to that?
We need to take a break right now, but we can take it after the break. You're listening to Talk of the Nation. We're here with presidential historian Robert Dalek, and you can join us. When has your level of experience worked or not worked for you? 1-800-989-8255 or shoot us an email, talk@npr.org. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Robert Smith in Washington. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Robert Smith in Washington. In most jobs, experience is a plus, if not a requirement. But can experience ever have a downside? Can you somehow be too experienced? We'll talk more about research on that in a moment. Right now, we're talking about the politics of experience. Presidential historian Robert Dalek is still with us. And you can join us, too. When in your life has your level of experience worked or not worked for you? 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org. Or you can read what other listeners have to say on our blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. We were talking to Amy in Denver, and she has one more question for Robert Dalek.
Yeah, I agree with the comments made about the judgment. I am an attorney, and I think judgment is a much more important, comes into issue every day, much more than experience. You have to be a leader that knows how to make the right decisions at the right time. I think that's a really big issue. I've been talking about with all of my friends about this issue of judgment and the fact about the war and how we got in there and how that was such poor judgment. So I'll take my comments off the air. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Amy. Well, you know, when you're president, you're also leader of the large bureaucracy. And in that sense, you know, when we think about, say, Lyndon Baines Johnson, someone who was able to reform a bureaucracy to get his agenda through Congress, can you say that there are times when you need that kind of experience going in?
Absolutely. Johnson was brilliant at leading legislation through the Congress. And he had such rich experience as a congressman and then Senate Majority Leader, and he understood what buttons had to be pushed in order to assure passage of major reform bills. Yet at the same time, if you rely on your experience to a degree that is overkill, that is, you say, well, I know, I understand, I know how to do this, and you run up against obstacles that you had not anticipated. Johnson, for example, in the Vietnam War, he couldn't mobilize the full support of the country. He did for a while, but he couldn't sustain it. He couldn't mobilize the full support of the Congress. So while he could get legislation through the House and the Senate as a leader, an executive legislator, he was not very good at mobilizing and sustaining the support of the Congress for his war effort in Vietnam. It varies from episode to episode, one might say.
Let's go to Karen. Karen joins us from Waterloo, Iowa.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking the call. My point is that for me, you don't get experience from being the president's wife, not the kind that's necessary to run the country, nor do you get it on the streets of Chicago prior to serving. So for me, if we equal that out, it boils down to character. And with regard to character, I would have to say that Barack Obama has a stronger character suit. Case in point, the very idea that Hillary would consider thinking that Florida's election should stand without a redo or anything else is, to me, lacking in character. She was the only one on the ballot. She was the only one who bothered to go there because it was supposed to have been not held. So, for me, I guess it would boil down to character.
Thank you very much, Karen. You know, that actually illustrates another kind of experience, which is experience in politics and experience in campaign. Hillary Clinton, some would say, over the last 2 weeks, you could look at that as a character decision. Or you could say Hillary Clinton over the last 2 weeks has shown enormous political resiliency, has been very crafty, and has brought herself back into this race using what is a very long experience in politics. What do you think?
Absolutely. It cuts both ways, doesn't it? You could go out there and find, as you just heard, here is someone who's a voter who doesn't like the fact that Hillary Clinton seems to be so manipulative. She would use that term probably to describe the way in which she was invoking that political experience. And there are others out there who would say, as you just said, well, look how shrewd a politician she is. This is what you're going to need when you're in the White House trying to get legislation passed by a difficult Congress or by obstreperous House members and senators. So it cuts two ways. And on balance, voters have to decide what's more important to me, what has a higher sort of valence in my judgment. And that's what makes this a horse race.
Well, let's turn to the science now. Joining us now is John Cloud. He's a senior writer for Time magazine and wrote the article The Science of Experience for the magazine. You can find a link to it at npr.org. John Cloud joins us from our bureau in New York. Welcome, John.
Thanks for having me.
So what is it? Is experience always better?
No. Well, let me start by saying people have to have about 10 years of experience to become adept at doing something, to gain expert performance, whether you're playing chess or figure skating or practicing dermatology. This has been studied across many fields, and 10 years is sort of a minimum time that you have to do something. After 10 years, however, there's very little correlation between expert performance and number of years that you've continued to do something beyond that mark. So what matters more is how much you practice and the kinds of deliberate practice you engage in, challenging yourself in new ways.
So what's the downside of experience after 10 years?
The downside is overconfidence. Studies have been done, for example, on drivers. I mean, that's something all of us do. After 20 years, a regular driver who doesn't constantly challenge themselves or practice driving techniques, which why would you? You've already gotten your license. Those people will check their mirrors less often. They will brake later than both novice drivers and also truly expert drivers. There's a group called the Institute of Advanced Motorists in Britain, and these are drivers who, they're dedicated to their cars and to the practice of driving, and they were studied in comparison with regular drivers of 20 years experience, and they are much better. They are truly expert drivers, but your typical driver who, just drives to and from to work every day, those people were actually be worse than novices at these basic safety techniques.
Well, sometimes this goes against common sense. I think Hillary Clinton herself on the campaign trail noted that when her husband, President Bill Clinton, had a heart issue, they took him to the most experienced heart surgeon they could possibly find in one of the best hospitals in New York. When you think about that, of course you'd want someone who has more operations under their belt, or if someone's fixing your car, someone who has fixed Volvos their entire life. But is it not necessarily the case? Should we think twice before we automatically do that?
Yeah, because, I mean, what a level of experience beyond 10 years will do for you is give you a certain amount of confidence. So there's a lab at Florida State University, the Human Performance Laboratory, where these they run all kinds of different professions through these experiments. They have cops there that are put in simulations to stop a person who's going to blow up a school bus. And then I watched a simulation with nurses. I watched a novice nurse. He's just out of nursing school. Go through the same simulation as a nurse with 25 years experience. It was a very classic thing that could happen in an emergency room. The patient's blood pressure is falling. And the novice nurse gets into the simulation. He's confused. He drops things. He's asking the patient questions that aren't relevant. He really is not in command, as you would expect, because he's a novice of this situation. And in fact, in the simulation, the patient dies. Then this nurse with 25 years experience comes into the lab to do the same experiment. She is in complete command of the room. She asks all the right questions. She noticed these medications that are already on the line for the patient. She knows the right answer, but because she's so experienced, she and confident, she has walked into the room and neglected to pick up the patient's chart. Mm-hmm. And at a crucial moment, she needs to know the patient's weight, and so she has to walk across the room to get the chart. Mm-hmm. She hasn't done that. She doesn't know the weight, and she can't give this right dose of medication. She ends up having to choose a more dangerous medication, and the patient died as well. And she actually killed the patient a little faster than the novice did. And this is, mm-hmm. you know, this is the kind of overconfidence and
sure.
And the way you change that, again, is this notion of deliberate practice. This is a notion that Anders Ericsson at Florida State has developed, and this was first conveyed with chess. They studied chess in the last 30 mm-hmm. years, and it is the chess players who they try themselves against the most difficult players. They put themselves in the most difficult situations and try to get out of them. Number of years doesn't matter. It's how hard you – if you're a figure skater, for instance, you have to practice the most difficult jumps.
Absolutely.
Challenge yourself.
Well, let's
that's what will help.
Let's take some of these stories from our listeners. We have a lot of people who have called in talking about in their own careers how change versus experience sort of works. Let's go to Bo. Bo joins us from Atlanta, Georgia.
Yes, hello.
Go ahead, Bo.
Thank you for taking the call. It was early on, as a chemical engineer going into sales and marketing, some 20 years ago, you know, my employers didn't want someone who had a bag full of experience that had been with other companies, that had, you know, been molded, so to speak, into, you know, someone else's image. They wanted a clean slate. And, you know, that's one of the reasons I was hired. You know, as I'm an African-American, and, you know, in that field, there weren't a lot of us. And now, some 20 years later, as I've gone on in my career, though, I found that the higher I moved in the market or in the organizations that I've worked for, experience did count. And that's when they really did want someone who had seen the scenarios before and had worked for others. And so, you know, maybe the same would hold true for president. I mean, if you were looking at for a low-level cabinet position, maybe you wouldn't need somebody with a lot of experience. But, you know, in the case of Hillary Clinton, I think all of her experiences that she's had from even before she came to the White House will be very valuable to us.
Thank you very much, Bo. Let's turn to presidential historian Robert Dalek. Is there anything you hear in this science that applies to political science?
Sure. what it sounds like to me is that you want someone who has rich experience, but you also want them to have a certain openness, a certain flexibility. Because if your experience is making you rigid, is making you so confident that you know exactly what to do in this situation, you may blunder, as was described about that experienced nurse who just took so much for granted that she didn't remember that she needed to go and look at that chart in order to measure the patient's weight. So you want someone with that experience, but you also want them to have sufficient measure of receptivity to the newness of the situation, which will alert them to the fact that they can't strictly rely on their experience.
Janet joins us from Charleston, North Carolina. Janet?
Yes, as a breeder, I'm a plant breeder, but, you know, you really need a combination of experience, creativity, and judgment, and I think this argument about the presidential candidates is pretty simplistic. I mean, when I make decisions on a lot of the things that I want to keep in the program or get rid of in the program or where I'm going, I mean, think of it like horse breeding. You know, when you go to the horse auctions in Kentucky, those experienced breeders and trainers, they look at these foals that are six months old, and they can tell by looking at them which ones are going to be the winners. How do they know that? Mm-hmm. It's like a calculator that goes on in the mind that helps you make decisions quickly, and experience definitely helps in that. And so judgment does come in, but, you know, this argument that just because someone's inexperienced, they're going to be a better presidential candidate is kind of backwards. I mean, the president is the executive in charge of the entire federal government. Trying to make the federal government change and be responsive to the people after 8 years of being devastated under the Bush administration is not going to be an easy task. I mean, Al Gore was probably the best reinventing government person that we ever experienced in the federal government because he understood how it worked. And I'm afraid Obama is too naive and inexperienced to understand what he's even going to be up against trying to run the federal government.
Thanks for your phone call, Janet. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. The caller mentioned Al Gore. Robert Dalek, the vice presidency has traditionally been the stepping stone to the presidency. And yet the question would be, what do you learn? What kind of experience do you get as a vice president? Some would say that in many ways that's less of an experience than the Senate or the House.
Well, in fact, Robert, the vice presidency has not been a stepping stone to the presidency.
Maybe that's why.
In the early 20th century, Woodrow Wilson said, there's nothing to say about the vice presidency, and after you've said that, there's nothing more to say. It was pretty empty as an office in which you learned terribly much. Presidents kept you at arm's length. You presided over the Senate, but John Adams said it was the most insignificant office ever invented by the mind of man. Now, only in recent years has it become a much more significant office. And that has largely to do with the Cold War and the fact that presidents needed vice presidents to travel for them. And with presidential illnesses, you had with Dwight Eisenhower, you needed someone who was going to stand in. And so more recently, vice presidents have become more important.
Understood. We have time for one last phone call. Let's go to Noel. Noel's calling us from Salt Lake City.
Yes, I'm Noel Gardner, and I'm a forensic psychiatrist. I've evaluated many people who've committed horrific crimes, both violent crimes and then business-related crimes. And I think the biggest issue around judgment often is failure to have self-awareness. That is, people make mistakes when they're too confident, too arrogant, when they don't really understand themselves. So it's not just knowledge of history or knowledge of the workings of government or even experience, but it also needs that next piece of self-awareness that gives you the capacity for wisdom. And I was struck by reading the autobiography of Mr. Obama that he had extraordinary experience of self-awareness, which will add a piece to his capacity for wisdom and therefore for judgment.
Let's get a response to that from John Cloud. What do you think, John?
Well, I will say the notion of experience leading to overconfidence is it's not just about being overconfident. There's a notion called automaticity that happens when you're very practiced at doing something. You do it almost automatically. In the case of this nurse, she walked in and she almost automatically, instinctively looked up to see what medications were already on the line. The novice nurse did not do that. Obviously, you want someone who has those instinctive impulses to do the right thing. But they, because of the automaticity, something, you know, cognitively, you free up in your brain space to do other things, like think about what you're going to have for dinner, and maybe that's why you don't pick this chart up. So, you know, it's really not what we have to decide in the end, and I, you know, very much agree with Robert Dalek on this. You have to decide, you know, what the experiences of these candidates have led them to truly value. I mean, that, you know, it is not just the sheer number of years, and that's why Hillary Clinton is wrong about that. I will say it must be painfully frustrating for her to think of herself having, you know, so much more experience than Barack Obama, and thinking that voters aren't automatically with her on that, which is why she uses that word so often.
John Cloud is a senior writer for Time Magazine. He's joining us from the New York Bureau. And Robert Dalek is a presidential historian. He's written biographies of Franklin Delano Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson and John F. Kennedy. Coming up, the Talk of the Nation opinion page and an argument that Dungeons & Dragons was so much more than a game. It led the way to our present age of electronic miracles. Wired's Adam Rogers joins us next. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.